Okay, hello. I'm Shelley Bowman, and I'm here with Anais Salas. And after a bit of faffing about, we're finally here. And I was joking with my husband because I was like, "Oh, she's late because her power went off." And he used to live in the Philippines, and he's like, "Is she in a third world country?" And I was like, "She's in the States." But anyways, so I wanted to ask you, how did you get into? Let's just kick off with how you got into what you do.
Oh my. Well, it's a very long story, but from the time I was a child, young child, there were signs and synchronicities and there were memories. And the first most incredible moment that I had about a strong feeling about, wait a minute, what is this thing we call time? I was on a class field trip in the Sackler wing of the Metropolitan Museum, and looking at all the Egyptian wonderful stuff, thought was fascinating, very curious, and I loved it. And I walked up to this one case and I looked in and I went, oh my God, that's my stuff. And I almost fainted. There was just no mistaking it. It was a brush and some jewelry. Not a lot of glitzy stuff, but it was, and I thought, that's my stuff. Who do you tell?
How old
Who
were
do
you?
you tell? I was 14 years old. Who do you tell? So I noted the name of the owner, the person who was assigned to those discoveries, the person whose jewelry, whose stuff that was back then, or wherever that is now. Now, this is interesting. I ended up going to Egypt. I had the opportunity to go to Egypt, and I knew that one of my jobs that I had to do was to go into the Cairo Museum and find that mummy and release that spirit. So many years later, I'm with a friend, and I said, "No, I gotta go to the Cairo Museum." He said, "Who are you looking for?" I said, "I don't know, I'm gonna find it." He said, "Well, how do you know where to look?" I said, "I don't know, I'll just know. I'll find it. I'll be pulled there." Sure enough, there I am, looking at the coffin. This is me, some version of me in that coffin, some version of me trapped inside that cellular material. Yeah, so there was some stuff that
Okay.
had happened in between. I had an unexpected, delightful moment of spiritual awakening when I'd been having out-of-body experiences, and I'd already had the experience of bilocating and having that validated, having my bilocation experience validated, that I saw what I saw and that I was where I was. And one day, I love bookstores. I was in Borders again, and literally trying to. I was unsettled. I was like, "Why am I having these out of body experiences? What is the point? What is the point of this? I don't understand what the point is. I'm not going to keep doing it if there's no point." So I'm, wandering around. Book fell on my head. Literally, nobody else around. Nobody. Boom! Came down off the shelf, hit me in the back of the head, lands on the floor. Cover up. Journeys Out of the Body by Robert Munro.
From the Monroe Institute.
Yeah, so I immediately bought the book and went to the institute. I mean, like immediately. I had to wait 2 months, but I said, "When can I come? When can I come?" So I thought, okay, this guy can tell me something. I can make a decision. So I get to the institute. I loved it. It was a great group of people, small group. And I go, and it was a Thursday, and I went into our little exercise experience. Absolute, straight up, what they call Kundalini, but it didn't go pinging around. It went straight up and out. Right, boom, explosion of white light in the center of my head. And now I'm sitting in a surround sound auditorium with other beings. Slideshow. This life, 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 this life. And I'm like, okay, it got to like 1,000. I was like, what's the point? I got the point. Anyway, I came out of this experience. Now, mind you, These little things that had happened along the way did not exactly prepare me for that moment. And I came out and I'm like, okay, we're in chair time. I said, okay, somebody tell me what these pipes are. I have pipes. What are these pipes? I have pipes. I have a pipe here and a pipe here, and I got pipes here, and I got little pipes on my foot. What are these pipes? I'm going home. I didn't come here for this. It's Thursday. I'm leaving. And, Saturday, I don't have to stay. Unfortunately, there were people there who were like, you're fine. You're fine. That your chakra's opened. I'm like, what's a chakra? And my hands just wanted to touch. And there was a woman sitting next to me who came out of her experience. She had a terrible, I said, oh my God, I got such a headache. And my hands were like, no. Stop it. One answered her. I don't come from a touch culture. You don't touch people without, I mean, you just don't do that. And I said to her, would it be all right if I put my hands on your head? She said, oh God, not yet. Put my hands on her head. 30 seconds. Pain was gone. Oh, thank. I'm like, oh my God. I went home. It took me 7 hours to get there. It took me 4 hours to get back. Same route, same speed, la la la, out of the time matrix. Out. Completely out. I said, no, this is not possible. I should be getting home in the same 4 hours. Meanwhile, I'm so expanded while I'm driving home that my energy field was so expanded that I could feel when I would drive past a high tension wire. It was like getting cut. It was like getting cut with a knife.
Wow.
And I'm like, I hope this is the way home because I don't recognize anything. Now, prior to that moment, married to a guy in medical school, two great kids. I'm a certified shorthand reporter, very focused, listening for the truth, doing a great job, making a lot of money. That was my life. And I come home and I'm this completely different person. And I'm trying to do my transcription work. And I've got fire letters from the Akashic Records floating off the transcript pages.
Oh, time for a pivot.
It was a big pivot. It was huge.
So,
That's the short version.
okay. And so what did you end up then? Did you just give up that job and go straight into what you do now, or how did that?
I could not do the job anymore because energy was moving, things were moving. I was having all these experiences and I couldn't tell anyone. So
Why?
I couldn't. No, this was not something you talk to people about who are in medical school.
Right.
No. But it all worked out because I had gone with him to his classes and taken all his lectures on my shorthand re machine. And then I had the vocabulary to do the medical malpractice cases. It was beautiful. Well, we ended up separating, blew up the family. 2 years later, I've got my hands on critically burned patients in Moscow, Russia, working alongside doctors and hospital producing stem cells.
Wow.
Dissolving tumors, controlling pain with touch. The man is having his third degree hands debrided with no narcotic.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Made a documentary about that. So then I came home and I'm like, writing little notes to my family. Oh, Russia's cool and in it. And I came with this footage. I'm like, who are you?
Well, you did told them in a roundabout way.
There it is. It's on video, and this is what I'm doing. And I know it's confusing for you. It's confusing for me. I love y'all. I love everybody. Let's just leave it at that, okay? I'll figure it out, or not.
And have they?
No.
Oh.
No. They so wish I was still a court reporter married to a doctor. They so wish. Like, how would you, why would you ever give that up?
Right. Interesting. My husband, when I first told him I was a Reiki master, he said, he's German, he's very and he was like, "You mean you're a charlatan?" And I was like, "No, not quite." And but we've been together for 17 years, just over 17 years, and along the way he's seen so much stuff that he's just like my for example, my cat prefers me. The cat's been with me in several lifetimes, and it's like, it's my, it's a being that's been with me for a long time. And he's like, "You witched the cat. The cat doesn't like me. You witched it." And I'm like, "If I'm a charlatan, how can I witch things?" And we had one of our previous cats was, she was 19. She'd had a long life and she was ready. She was finished. And I just did a little procedure and I came in and that cat was really his cat. And I said, "Okay, she's gonna go in like 2 to 3 hours, just lie in bed with her until she passes." And I came out and meditated for an hour or two. And he came out and he was crying and the cat had gone. Little things like that happen along the way. And now he's like, the cat has an asthma attack. He's like, "Do your thing on the cat." I'm like, okay. It's not charlatan, it's not witchy, it's just like it's what happens in our house.
Gosh, that's so great. I have moments like that with my children. Well, for instance, when I was the court reporter and I did it, I had a big case. And I thought, what would be fun? Let's all go to Disney World for Christmas. So I booked a trip, like seven people, paid for all the plane tickets, paid for the hotel. We stayed for a week with them. It was a wonderful time. But we had to get there first. So we're flying from Philadelphia and we get on the plane and everybody's tucked in and belted and get off the plane, get everybody gathered up and get off of this plane right now. I'm like, okay, let's see how this goes. So I went quietly. People were still getting settled. I went quietly to my people who were sitting here, sitting there. I said, "We have to get off the plane." And I said, "No, Camille, we have to get off the plane. So here's what I'm going to do. You guys get your things together, and I'm going to go up and tell the stewardess that I've suddenly become violently ill and we've just got to get off." As they're walking up to meet me at the stewardess, who's about to figure out how the door had been closed, how to get us off the plane, the captain comes over the loudspeaker. "Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain. In doing our pre-flight checklist, we've discovered a mechanical issue with this plane. So we're going to ask you all to deboard while we find you another plane to make sure that you get safely to Orlando."
Wow.
That time they were like, "All right, we'll give you that one."
Right. Yeah, my mom had her moments as well, and there was one time because my parents separated when I was quite young, and she would let me go with my dad every weekend. And most weekends he was a banker, but on the weekends he was a pilot, a small plane pilot. And one weekend she wouldn't let me go. She just wouldn't. And she wanted me to spend time with him, but that one time she said, "No, you cannot." And he crashed and died. And it was like, whoa, like she just said, "There's no way you're taking Shelley this weekend." And there was other little things, but that was the one that was just like, whoa, mom. But she only had that kind of intuition around my sister and I. It wasn't like other things. It was more just little things would happen and she'd like, the oil ran out in my car. And I was in college in Southern California. They were in Northern California. And completely fried the engine. I pick up the phone, "Mom, I fried the engine." She's like, "I know, we're already looking at another, used car for you." And I'm like, "Okay." But yeah,
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
but there's
And
that connection.
it is genetic.
Yeah, there's that
Exactly.
connection. I think that when you're so tied to people, you're going to take care of them and on an energetic level.
Yeah, but it's not just my family that benefits from all of this. I've done similar things all over the world. And part of the training, though, for me was all the lead up that I've just described to you. And the bilocation stuff was really part of that. That was extraordinary to bilocate and find myself standing beside a car wreck and looking around and going, gosh, this looks like New York State. And I'm beside a car with a mother and her two girls, and there's a guy across. There was a head-on collision. There's another earth angel on the with the passenger in the other car who was deceased. And our job was to stay there until physical 3D help came. Just protect everybody, take care of what needed. And so that was fine. And so then I'm draw it was like a camera, well, it was like a zoom camera lens into that landscape, and then a zoom camera lens back into my body. And I thought, really? So then 2 days later, I'm just opening my front door, and my neighbor Bill is walking upstairs to his apartment. And I say, hey, Bill, where you been? He said, oh, I was visiting my sister. I said, oh my gosh, they were the ones in the car crash. Your sister and her two kids, but they're okay. He said, how could you possibly know that?
Wow.
Well, I was there, Bill. This is lots of that. Lots of that. People seeing me on the road, waving at them. People I'd been in one of my workshops going, slow down. There's this situation around that next curve. You don't want to be going that fast. Letters from people in Moscow. It was so great to see you. I loved having lunch with you.
You weren't in Moscow then.
Well, not this part of me anyway, where but some other
Yeah. Oh, I get
yeah,
it.
enough to sit down and have lunch and eat.
Right. Interesting.
Oh, it's I mean really. So here's the question. How is this valuable to other people? Because that is the point. When I kept asking, what's the point? What's the point? We're here to help other people. We're here to be that rising tide that lifts all boats and extends this massive aura of trust. You can trust your life. You can trust what's inside of you. You can take these little tiny risks and you can do these small things and focus your attention in a different way and experience what happens. Experience their freedom. That's for me, it's extraordinary to
Yeah.
bring people. It's like giving birth and giving birth and giving birth and giving birth and giving birth.
And it is like everyone is capable of extraordinary things. I mentioned my mom, and specifically with my sister and I, because that was the limit of her, compassion, and that we were part of her little space bubble. But and it doesn't matter where we were still connected in that thing. But we can do this stuff. Everyone could do this stuff, and they can do it with everyone. It's just that open-mindedness to be able to. Anyway, and on a lighter note, you have a connection with Bobby McFerrin. I want to hear about it.
You want to hear that story? This is one of my favorite stories because it was so improbable. I was about to have a birthday. I was living in Seattle at the time, and I love bookstores, and I was wandering around, and many things have happened to me in Borders. I don't know why that store closed.
Did it
But they were
close?
having, yeah, I think Borders is no more, as far as I know.
I haven't spent
I
much
hope
time
I'm
for
wrong. I
so
hope
long.
I'm wrong.
Anyway, okay, go on.
So they were having, I was in a section and they had on the table one of those little boxes with little forms you could fill your name out and then a raffle and put it in the box. And what was the win? The win was two tickets, Bobby McFerrin, Benaroya Royal Hall. Great seats. So I enter and I just knew. I knew. It's like, oh, this is gonna be really cool. And sure enough, I get the text and the phone call. You've won two tickets. I'm like, fabulous. So they were at will call. I invited a friend to go with me, and we were in third row, right?
Amazing.
And he's just the best. He's so free and so heart-centered and so trusting of his own instrument. Astonishing. Well, he does a little moment in his show where he like gets down off the stage and comes down and walks into the crowd, and I was like, here comes your girl. And sure enough, he walked up to me. He like, you know, and I stood up and he puts the microphone up to me. He said, "You want to do this?" And I'm like, "Yes, I do." And he started to sing, and our voices just melded in the way that he sings, which is just riff, riff, jazz, jazz, whatever, improv, improv. We were completely in sync.
Beautiful.
There's like 3,000 people in Benner Royal Hall, and I'm like looking at Bobby, like, "Let's do this, Bobby." Like, "Oh my." And then he's like, and then I sat down. I was like, so cool. And then after I went with my album, because I bought his new album, and I went to stand in line with the other folks to get my album signed. And people were like, "Oh, that was so cool. You're a plant, right? You're a professional singer. And he put you there so that you could." I'm like, "No. No, not at all." So I turned to walk up to the table. He got up from the table and he came around and just gave me the best hug. He said, "Oh, you." And I'm like, "No, you." It was so sweet. Fabulous birthday present.
Beautiful, amazing. And there was something that you mentioned about getting over a near drowning experience as a child and becoming a professional, well, not a professional, but a certified sailor. That's
I
an
did.
amazing thing.
That was a test of my spiritual mettle to conquer that fear. So yeah, I nearly drowned in a, where my family were at a weekend, you know, summer party at my parents' family posh estate somewhere, and they had an in-ground pool, and all the kids were in the pool, and I'm floating around in an inner tube, just like I didn't know anything about, and I was 5 years old. What did I know? And one of the boys came over and grabbed the inner tube, just grabbed it and took it. And we're 6 feet of water, and I was like, I don't know, 45 pounds, Sinkorama. I have no idea what's going on. I just know I can't breathe, and I don't know how to swim. And I'm screaming for help, and I'm watching big bubbles, no sound. And I'm like, "Oh my God, what is happening?" And I'm like, oh my God, I'm thrashing. And I just, well, it's like I was just going to thrash till I died, I guess. But anyway, I had a really long hair then, longer than this, and I was had it in a braid. And my older sister saw, she's like, "What is she doing? She's not supposed to be under the water." She reached down, grabbed my braid, pulled my head up out of the water, and saved my life.
Wow.
Now, when she pulled me up out of the water, I had flat thrashed my way to the shallow end of the pool, which I didn't know. So when I stood up, I was in water that wasn't up to my knees, and everybody laughed. They had no idea of the terror that I had been in. They thought I was stupid, ridiculous. So I went to sit on the shallow end of the pool, trying to pull myself together. Like, what just happened to me? My mother was a fashion model at that time, and she put her magazine down, put her cigarette out, put her gin and tonic on a cocktail table, and deigned to come and sit on the steps with me in the pool. She put one little arm around me. She said, "Dear, dear, don't make such a fuss. Nobody drowns in the shallow end of the pool." Well, I took that message for what it was worth. And then years later, I just thought, I can't keep this fear. So first I signed up to be in a swimming class.
You had an ongoing fear of the water after
Oh,
that.
terrible, terrible, horrible. So I signed up for a swim class with babies. I was in a swimming class with babies in diapers.
How old were you?
Old. I was a grown adult with two kids.
Oh, okay.
And I had taught both of my children how to swim because I wasn't going to have them have that terrible limitation. Then the next step was taking another class and with other adult people. And just the freedom. I was so terrified of having to swim across the pool and then swim back and have to swim in 6 feet of water. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Okay, cool. Okay, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? What do you do? I said, backstroke, do the backstroke, do the backstroke. And so I'm like, okay, I push off and I'm doing the backstroke and I'm starting to freak out. And a voice comes into my being and says, darling, you're swimming on top of the water. That's all you have to do. Don't worry about the rest of it. Just stay on top of the water. I thought, oh, I could do that. Did the turnaround, came back, passed the course. And several years later, my dream was to sail. And when I lived in San Diego, I joined the San Diego Yacht Club and I had taken a year's worth of sailing lessons and the correspondence course and I learned how to tie all the knots. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to do it. So I chartered a boat, 32-foot boat, for a week. And I hired a captain. And in that week, we did our sailing around San Diego Bay and Catalina and all that. And I had to do the drills and all of that. I became the first woman in that yacht club to get my basic sailing certification and bareboat sailing charter certification in the span of 1 week.
Amazing. Go you.
So we can overcome these things.
Yeah. When I was young, we saw Jaws and then we went to Hawaii and my mother rented us one of those rafts that's blue on one side and red on the other, like the kid that gets eaten in Jaws. And so my sister and I sat on the shore going, not gonna go in the water, not gonna go in the water. My mom's like, I rented and I brought you here. I got the raft. Not gonna go in the water. I mean, I had such a terror. Like, I would be afraid of sharks in a swimming pool, in a bathtub. It's gonna come and get me. To the point where I heard that there was an El Nido and there was a lot of pelagic activity in off of Burma in the Marigui Archipelago. And so I found out that BSAC, British Sub Aqua Club, not PADI, British Sub Aqua Club makes the best divers. So I got certified in record time and went there, not just certified, like they have club diver and then, you know, advanced levels. And the people that were doing it, I went up three levels and they were like, you can't do this, that they take each level for BSAC. And I was like, no, no, no. Every weekend I'm doing it. I'm every, you know, club night, I'm getting lessons. Every weekend I'm diving, I'm doing a lesson. Go through. And then I went to the Marigui Archipelago. I swam with sharks and I was like, this is freaking amazing. I love sharks. And I became a tech diving instructor. So I would teach big military guys to go to 100 meters on like bunny gases and rebreathers and stuff. But, you know, it wasn't just like half measures. I'm just going to be an open water diver and look at sharks. It's like, no, we're going for this. We're going to go see sharks inside caves and wrecks and, you know, and it was amazing.
That's mastery though. I mean, that is mastery. And it's not because you're trying to control anything. It's that you're going to be a 360 degree spherical human being.
It's looking at a limitation and thinking, how can I alleviate this limitation? And the same with, you look at people that maybe are not as physically fit as they could be, and it's like, well, you know, it's you're making your body a limitation by not getting up and moving. And mm-hmm. You know, we have so many different kinds of limitations. I went to Mount Kailash and they were like, you know, on this trip you're gonna eliminate something. What are you gonna eliminate? And we were coming back and this girl asked me, what did you eliminate? And I was like, I can pee anywhere, you know, because over a 3 week period, you know, the trees disappear, the rocks disappear, you're in a bus, you have to get off the bus and pee. You could pee anywhere with a whole busload of people. It's like you take off layers of limitations as needed. And the freedom of each limitation being removed is amazing. And it's not just being able to pee, but it's like, you know, everyone has certain phobias, fears, or whatever. And if we can just work through those, that is freedom.
That's the juice. That's what I love about my work. The companionship of being that for other people and with other people, being the companion to them discovering their freedom. What, I can't think of anything I'd rather do other than be a mom, which I really loved, love, still love. They don't need me now. But that is just so, there really aren't words for that. I'm just really glad that I get to do it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The world needs more wise elders like yourself. And people that are willing to step into that role of being the wise elder, because, you know, we don't have that many people that can put themselves out there when they've accumulated such incredible wisdom.
It's, you know, we were talking about the generational development before we came on, which is so important right now. And I think we have a unique, maybe it's not totally unique situation in the United States, but there's this sort of line in the sand of demarcation of, well, you don't have any value right now, and I'm 40 and I know everything, and you don't have anything to teach me. And then that 40-year-old gets to be, and the 30-year-old comes up and says, you're 50, you don't have anything to teach me. And so that's part of the scene in the United States around different expressions of spirituality, and everybody's got to find their own place. Let me put it that way. We should. We each have our own place, and it's unique. Nobody's place is like anybody else's place.
Yep.
But there's so much hubris in the U.S. culture, and I see little glimmers of that starting to shift. And it's really gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Right. I mean, I'm in Hong Kong, and there is still some reverence for the wise elders here. And that's, you know, in Asia in general, I think people will still have that reverence for the wisdom of the elders. And, you know, I know that that's not so much the case sometimes in the States, although I have amazing aunts, uncles, and, you know, my mother's cousins, and my mother's past, but there are people that I know that are incredible, and I've, you know, they're such a valuable resource of just love and inspiration and wisdom. There's one beautiful woman in Northern California, and she was an advisor in my last company, and her name is Jyoti Ma, and she's in Northern California, and near where I was born, actually. But she used to say, just remember, you know, I'm there with you. You've got a grandma in your pocket. And I'd be like, oh, thank you. It's beautiful.
It really is. And I am encouraged by the strides that women in the States and around the world have made in the last 20, 30, 40 years. I'm amazed. And we have so much further to go.
Yeah, there's sometimes I look at the news that's on this in the States about, you know, women's rights and things, and I'm like, this is 2024. Why the hell is this shit still happening? And then other times I'm like, wow, we have come so far in terms of, like, they used to burn people like us at stakes, and now women's circles, and we're, you know, doing amazing, like living the whole witchy life and being, you know, proud of it. And it's like, that's there's two sides of a coin, put it that way. And
we have further to go. And one of the things that I would love to put out to your audience, and the women and the men in your audience, is that it is absolutely possible for a woman to learn how to control her own process of conception. I've done this work with people. I've taught this. And that if you have the right approach with the soul being that is thinking of making your body its home, its launch pad, you both have a right to have a conversation about, is this the best choice for both of us? And there are ways too, when there's an agreement reached between two sentient beings, the child who's about to come into your life is a fully sentient being. Before you ever hold it in your arms as an infant. That's the part that's so like, no, you got to get past that. This is a sentient being who is coming into this plane of mad, crazy existence through you. You can have a conversation with another sentient being and you can make an agreement. And learning how to craft that agreement in your body so that if you both agree, this is not the right time or the right place, there is a natural, easy, painless, safe release that I think every woman should know how to do with her own body. Doesn't require drugs. It's a spiritual practice.
Interesting. I've not heard of this. So it's just...
Well, there's a lot of stuff that I do that people haven't heard of. When I first, I was just between you and me and the fence post, in 1993, I taught my first group of students, and I showed them the practice of cords that can wind between people, and sometimes they're not healthy cords of energy and you want to reevaluate those. But I taught the first how to disentangle those entanglements, those cords, not to cut them, but to use the subtle energy to dissolve them.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. So that what you have entangled with, you give back to that person so that they can rework it in themselves. You don't cut it. I was so horrified because really nobody had done this. And then years later, I still hear people, now just cut the cords. And I'm like, oh, God, you know. But I brought in the real deal, and then people did with it what they do with it. We can't control everything. But just as that became a practice that people are quite comfortable with today, a lot of people are like, yeah, I can do that. I get that. I get the understand the need for it. I think we could do that. Women, you can be 100% in charge of what your body does or does not do. Period. So if any of you want to like reach out to me, happy to do a workshop about this because it's time. Okay. With what's going on right now, it's time for you to be empowered in that way, or at least begin to embrace the feeling that as a sovereign sentient being, you have that complete right. That's part of your birthright bliss. To be able to reach those agreements with other sentient beings for the good of your wholeness and their wholeness and the wholeness of the planet. You don't need permission.
Right. Beautiful. Let's get that workshop going.
Oh, I got on a soapbox there, but it's so, I mean, right now, this is really important.
Yeah.
It's always been important.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get that workshop
Thank you
going.
For letting me say that.
And it's been amazing speaking with you. Thank you for getting on, even after your power outages and glitzes and things.
So she can pee anywhere, but I can come on for an interview in my jammies, okay?
We all have our superpowers.
Such a pleasure.
Beautiful. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me. And I know we just briefly connected on LinkedIn, and as it's happened, it's like just the most interesting people come into my life. And like, I mean, from a random person on LinkedIn, I had an exorcism done. He just said, you know, my psychic says I need to contact you. Call me, call me, call me. And I'm like, okay. And a 15-minute call turned into a 3-hour exorcism. And, you know, just the most interesting people come across my path. And I'm blessed. And so blessed to have met you. And
thank you so much. Props.
And
let's stay in touch.
Okay. So thank you. And I will be in touch after this. Bye.
Okay. Thank you for a beautiful chat. Namaste.
Namaste. Or I say namaskaram.
Namaskar. Mm-hmm.